Accession number 21564, reel 30.
Carol Cormack, reel 30. You were saying that on your staff you had a drawing office. What was the drawing office for?
It provided the basic illustrations for our pamphlets. And they were a mixture of line drawings, some sketches, and then photographs. A nice mixture of those was, we all felt and traditionally felt, were essential to the liveliness of a publication, to give it some extra boost. There were the only things of really general interest were the two things I instituted. One was the introduction of colour into some of our drawings and illustrations, and secondly, the introduction of computers and word processors. Because when I arrived, there was the system for writing a book was the author would be allocated a book within his subject of general competence. Then he would go away and write it out by hand, and then he would feed that into our typing pool in the RSME, where the drafts would be typed out on A4 or their sizes of paper, duplicated by carbon paper, and then the copies would then be sent round to various appropriate authorities for their reading and comment and any suggested alterations. Then every time alterations came in and were accepted, every time things were altered, you had to retype the whole thing.
All over again.
And it was pretty time-consuming. And when I got the final draft, I had a whole set of pads in which I put my editorial comments for the printer. And the draft would then be marked in uppercase, lowercase, bold italics, indent here, indent there, and a mass of stamps with instructions to the printer. And then the printer's proof would come back, and we would go through that and correct any mistakes or misunderstandings and a chance for a few final alterations. And back it would go, and then a final proof copy would come. That would be paged up. And then you had a mock-up of the book, and that was corrected and sent back. It was a time-consuming and cumbersome process. For a standard-sized book, for example, on demolitions or mine warfare, it might take 6 to 9 months from the time the requirement was stated to the time the book went off to the printers. And this did seem to me to be a terrible waste of time and a delay, because when you were up to date 6 months ago, 9 months ago, you were probably out of date in some respects by the time the book was published.
Because of the time lag.
So the obvious thing was to introduce word processors, computer-aided design, that came in later, and so on. And that was a slow beginning. It's a reflection on the MOD as a whole that it was extremely difficult to get a computer system in, a word processor system in, to even a major establishment like the RSME, that was compatible with any other system that other parts of the ministry had installed. And it took years before an overall comprehensive policy was introduced so that you could use your word processor at A and know it could go through the MOD and be readily usable in B, C, and D elsewhere. That took a long time to get in, but nevertheless, it was much quicker. And over the years I was there, it evolved to such an extent that each author finished up with his own word processor, which he could use at home. And then he would type out his drafts on his keyboard, and some of them became quite adept at that. Then he would look at the thing. He could make his own layout alterations by shifting paragraphs around very simply. If alterations were then required by the authority making comments, they could be incorporated very easily. And spaces were allowed for artwork. And the whole thing improved, and the time frame decreased enormously. So it was nice to have a hand in modernizing, if you like, the production of publications for the Royal Engineers, and in some cases there were joint services publications for the Defence Forces as a whole.
How did you choose the authors, or were they chosen for you?
They were all subject to selection. A vacancy was allotted or advertised, and mostly in our sapper sources, but we had to latterly open the thing up and advertise for almost anyone to come in and fill. But basically, very few ever applied from outside. It was always one or two retired sapper officers who would be interested in that sort of work, which allowed them to work at home most of the time and then bring their work in once a week or so for me to look at and discuss with the appropriate part of the RSME, etc. You tended to go for a balanced team. There would be two, perhaps, who were experts on combat engineering. Nice to have someone who knew a lot about bridging, someone who would do mines, demolitions, water supply, as it went. Then in the civil engineering side, those who would know about concrete and pre-stress concrete or reinforced concrete, or water supply in general terms, any of the subjects relating to civil engineering. And you tended to go for a chap who had practical experience in that field, and who could actually write.
Who decided which titles needed to be written? Was this done by the chief engineer?
At the beginning, it was largely my overview, and I would look at the thing and see that publications have been in existence for 10, 15 years, sometimes longer. I had a quarterly meeting at the RSME with the commandant, an appropriate wing commander, chap from ENC would come down, and I would say, well, what we need to do is look at these publications, which are out of date and need updating. Do we still need them? Is the first question. And then if we do need them, what do we do need to change or anything? Do we need to rewrite it, or is the existing one all right? And so these were all discussed. And then I had a sort of plan for the next 6 months or year ahead that the following would need rewriting in that period. And then I would look at my authors and say, Tom, you do that one, Dick, you do that one, and Harry, that one. And it was allocated like that.
Were there any publications you did drop on the grounds that they were no longer required?
There were a number of publications that we dropped, and conversely, we found the need for sometimes an overdue need for a new publication. We tended to drop the more expensive, the more difficult, the more complicated civil engineering publications, because techniques, particularly in concrete and other work like that, tended to change quite rapidly, and there was usually a small number of the print run, because you were looking at a target of perhaps just a few hundred civil engineers in the army. You tended to say, right, we can get 20 or 30 books off the shelf, civilian publications which cover this field adequately, and then when they're out of date, we can buy some more. And then you don't have expensive author work to produce a book, and that inevitably takes a lot of time when you can do it quickly.
Did you have to go around then keeping an eye on what was being published by civil authors?
Well, I relied very much on two things, the wing at the RSME concerned and the Royal Military College of Science at Shrivenham, who did help me with the more complicated civil engineering works. And we would put it to them and say, look, such and such a book is coming up for review. We don't think it's necessary that we rewrite it, but what are the appropriate publications on the shelf that we might use instead? And, of course, then we had to budget for that.
Were your publications exclusively technical, or did you include tactical aspects as well?
No, they were all technical, yes. the School of Infantry had their own publication section. The School of Artillery had one. The School of Armour at Bovington had one. Almost every school had its own publication section of different sizes to deal with their own publications. There was, I'm sure there still is, a publication section at Staff College. And they produced the Staff Officer's Handbook, among other things, and other publications of tactics and at that level. But there is, and steadily must be, a move to centralise the production of publications. I say it's now some years since I retired. I don't quite know how that's gone, but things were drifting in that direction, to have general publications all done in one place.
What do you think are the principal advantages of having a military career?
Well, if you're lucky, if you're fortunate, great deal of job satisfaction. And that depends, I mean, luck comes into it, whether you're posted to place A instead of place B. That's where the chance comes in. And then the other degree of chance is when you get to A or B, what is actually happening there. But having said that, the scope for job satisfaction, certainly throughout my time, has been very great. I've had very few what I call dull routine postings. They've all been either interesting or very interesting, and sometimes interesting and exciting. And from my own personal point of view, something I've thoroughly enjoyed. I know things change, so I would never say because I enjoyed it, someone else would enjoy it, because the things are different. But assuming basic things don't change too much, it was it's a worthwhile career, very much so. Made a lot of great friends, done some interesting things, done some silly things. Yes, I think that would be a reasonable summary.
Have